Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh my goodness!
You are looking live.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in, Winning Cures Everything. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
This is college football, recap, reaction show? Sure. I think last week I did preview, didn't I?
Yeah.
They were reacting. Yeah.
Overreacting. Appropriately reacting?
Yes, just reacting in general to a not great slate, but still pretty entertaining week three. This was slow, and this will be the last slow one for a while, I think, because we got some big ones.
Listen, this Saturday is like pizza, okay? Was it good pizza? No, but it's still better than most anything else you're going to eat.
It's still pizza. You still enjoy it.
Bad pizza is still great.
There were some very entertaining things that went on. Do we want to recap our bets? We went a combined 8-4
Too shabby?
Yeah, that we did okay. We're finally getting the hang of this season. We're figuring out some of these teams. Yeah. Some of them still make no sense, right?
Yeah. I won one last week, which I needed desperately on a kind of a last minute put it in your ear by A&M to give me a kind of a garbage time cover. And yeah. I lost one this week with the same thing with Florida to take me from going 4-0. So
it will typically even out. So you went 3-1. I went 5-3, if only because Troy, for whatever reason, could not stop that kick returner from Southern Miss.
Southern Miss is a decent football team. They're not terrible.
No, they're not terrible at all, but If you would have told me that Southern Miss was going to put 47 up on anybody, I mean that makes no sense to me. So there were some crazy things. As always, go over to winningcureseverything.com. Check out what we got going over there. Of course, this week's picks contest still going on because we've got the NFL today on Sunday. We're recording this Sunday morning. A lot of stuff going on. You can go over there, check out our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Maybe some more special things, whatever, going on the Facebook and Twitter. We will figure that out because we want to add some more content. But Chris and I will discuss that and figure out exactly how we want to go about it. As always, sign up for the newsletter. Got a lot of things over there. We send it out once a week. We are riding over 515 subscribers right now. Not too shabby on that. Numbers are always going up. We appreciate you guys sharing out the show. If you're on the podcast, listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your favorite podcast app is, go and leave us a review. 5 stars, written review. Tell everybody about it. We really do appreciate it. We'll read it out on the show this week. We got some pretty good reviews in last week, and we were super happy about it. Somebody talked about how Chris gives some very passionate rants basically every show, and I'm pretty sure we're going to have another one this morning. But... but that's what Chris does, and I love it. And
they're organic.
Yeah,
they're very organic. They're not rehearsed, I assure you. How I really feel.
Yeah, you got that right. And, of course, the show is always brought to you by Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They've got 6 incredible sports books. I actually went down to 3 of them on Friday night, got some bets in, hit some winners, felt good about that. But you can find more information on that over at tunicatravel.com. I'm telling you, you want to go down there. It's a good time. I had fun Friday night watching North Carolina Wake Forest, watching Kansas Boston College and the beginning of Washington State Houston. So it's a good time. Go check them out, tunicatravel.com, and us over at winningcureseverything.com. Chris, let's jump in. I want to start off with Elastico. Iowa 18, Iowa State 17. Lightning delay meant that the second quarter didn't get started until after 6 p.m. Central Time. And this game started at 3 p.m. This was...
just a shade under a 10-hour game.
It was mayhem. Absolute mayhem. I don't think it was 10 hours. I think it ended at like 9 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, that's an exaggeration.
But even still, that's what, over 6 hours? And yeah. Nobody left that game. Rarely do you see a big, big rivalry game that has such a long weather delay. But this was crazy. Iowa State had two turnovers. Iowa had none. Iowa has not turned, and they made sure you knew this in the broadcast, Iowa has not turned the football over in this game since 2015.
That's incredible.
That's Kirk Ferentz. It's not beating yourself, and that's just the easiest way to win a game.
I was just about to say, just don't make mistakes.
Yeah, Iowa kicked the game-winning field goal with 4 minutes and 51 seconds left. Both quarterbacks had bad moments, but they were impressive. Brock Purdy, 24 out of 34, 276 yards, one touchdown. He had 9 rushes for 34 yards. Nate Stanley on the other side, 22 out of 35, 201 yards, 7 runs, 11 yards with one touchdown. At the end of this game, though, Brock Purdy and his throw on fourth down, that was awful. And it's the reason why I bet Iowa. Now, they didn't cover for me, but the reason why I bet Iowa here is Iowa always has a really, really good defense, and Brock Purdy against the two best defenses that he had faced last year, which were the only ones that were comparable to Iowa, he just wasn't good. He had a completion percentage of like 56%, and he looked rattled, etc. In this game, he did not look rattled initially, but once the pressure got cooked up a little bit and they no longer had the lead, he looked like a different quarterback. He did not perform as well under pressure. Now, they did get him down the field and whatnot. The ending of this game, you know, they get that, or they go forward on fourth down, they don't get it, and Iowa runs it three times, punts the ball, and Iowa State drops the football, which was a killer. All in all, though, super entertaining football game. Even for a low-scoring game, it was pressure-packed, it was fantastic to watch, it was two great coaches that were maneuvering basically the whole game. Did you try and watch this entire thing?
No, well, not the whole thing. I kept coming in and out of it just based on what else was going on.
Yeah. We didn't intend on it being a night game, right?
No, I wasn't expecting it to last as long as it did. I mean, this is the reason Kurt Ferentz is the longest tenured head coach in college football. Like, he is just really good at doing everything you're expected to do. Are they ever going to have one of these exceptional offenses? I don't know. I don't know that they're ever going to be the team to put up 40 and 50 a game. Okay. But I know this. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play great defense on a regular basis. And they are not going to have a bunch of penalties or turnovers to cause them to lose games.
Yeah.
And that means they're incredibly difficult to beat.
Yeah, they're insanely
difficult.
They're
always going to be a thorn in your side.
And the further that we get away from it, from everybody running the same kind of thing, you know, when Ferentz was going through his 6-6, 7-5 years, there were more people doing the same thing as him and maybe doing it better with better athletes.
Oh, yeah.
As we get away from, because you see the other teams that are moving away from it, right? Alabama can't run the football anymore, it doesn't feel like, at least not, you know, just pound the rock, right? They can't do that because they have switched
to
more finesse.
They're built to slow down these massive offensive teams.
Yeah, these teams that are more tempo-based, etc., as you get away from that, that actually makes Iowa better because people don't see it. It's kind of like when people would run up against the triple option, right? And it's not that they run the triple option. They just run a pro-style set,
I was going to say, they just were a standard pro-style offense.
But how many people in college still run that?
Nobody.
Exactly.
Nobody.
And that's what makes Iowa a little bit better at it. And it's what makes Iowa State, honestly, a Big 12 contender. Because they are so different from everybody else that is in that league. Everybody else wants to run pace. They want to run tempo. They want to get their wide receivers out in space. They want to do all this. And not that Iowa State doesn't want to do that. But Iowa State can still run the football and they can still play defense. And well, yeah, nobody else in the Big 12 does it.
Iowa State knows they don't have the dudes to do that. They don't have the talent that Oklahoma and Texas have. Like they just don't. And so if they try to run with those guys and beat them at their own game, they get beat every time.
Yeah,
the only way to beat them and to hang with them and to be in the conversation with those other teams that are better talented than you is to be unconventional. And what's strange is this old offense that was the standard in the NFL. So the reason it's called a pro-style offense, it was the league standard for 20 years. I mean, it's not like we're talking about I formation and just slow old-timey wing T stuff. We're talking about a really good pro offense that can still put up points. It just looks different than the way everybody else does it. And it takes different level of talent to do this. You got to have athletic tight ends, big, strong tight ends. You got to have athletic offensive linemen. These spread options offenses, that these RPOs, they don't have to build offensive linemen at all.
No.
Because you're pass blocking or run blocking for maybe 2 seconds, and that's it. The ball comes out so fast and so quick, and it's always going to a sideline or a slant, and it doesn't matter. They're just all short, efficient passes. You don't have to know how to pass block. It's the reason NFL is dying for some type of developmental league for strictly for one position, offensive line.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. The biggest thing, you and I talked about this last week, you know, you bring up unconventional. With Iowa State, teams like that that are going against teams that have more talent, the less plays that are in a game, the better odds you have. So running a slower tempo is actually better for some of these teams, because when you give better athletes more plays in order to make plays, that means they got more chances to be great. And if you limit those touches, those chances, you know, instead of an offense getting 90 to 100 plays a game, well, you cut them down to 50 or 60, that is 40 less opportunities for one of these five stars to go bananas.
That's right.
And that works out well for teams like this. So this was a fantastic game. I would not recommend maybe going back and watching it unless you love defense, unless you love that kind of thing, right? Let's move on from that. We spent enough time on Elastico. Let's move into Florida State and Virginia. Now, I know that this wasn't a massive game, but I'm going to pull up a quote, and we'll talk about what happened here. Virginia 31, Florida State 24. The ending was awful coaching. Absolutely awful. Florida State was up 17-10. At the end of the third quarter, and Virginia came out on offense in the fourth quarter and had three drives of 70-plus yards each that all ended in touchdowns. They scored 21 points in the fourth quarter after scoring 10 for the first three quarters combined. Florida State's defense was gassed. They didn't know what was going on. And even with all of that, Florida State was still down 31-24 with the ball driving late in the game and got two massive penalties that kept their drive alive. Fourth down calls with roughing the passer. They got a pass interference call. They had no timeouts left in the game. They end up getting a first and goal from the four-yard line, I believe it was, maybe the three. And we've got Sook in here again. we get down to the four-yard line, and Florida State, rather than clocking the ball and giving themselves an opportunity to line something up, they decide instead to just line up Cam Akers, you know, their all-star running back, in the Wildcat from the three to try and run the ball into the end zone. But nobody was really set. Nobody seemed to know what was going on. And rather than clock the ball and get organized, because they had time. The clock was stopping because of the first down. Yep. They had time to clock the ball. And I just, I don't understand it. This is the quote that Willie Taggart gave, okay? He said, well, I didn't call the plays. Kendall called the plays. He had the play called, and we just didn't get it done. I would love for you to comment on this because I know how you feel about head coaches that do this.
I share that tweet out and I commented on it on Twitter.
Yeah.
This morning when I saw it. And it's just very simple. I just cannot believe a head coach would be his comment. That would be what he would say at the end of a loss. I feel very strongly about this because from the age of like 24, 25, I was given my first managerial job in a business, and rule number one of managing a finish line, a shoe store, and then went to like a local restaurant. And as I worked my way up through life, managing a ton of different people and different things, there's one simple rule of leadership, and it's the very first rule. In a loss, when something goes wrong, whoever is in charge takes full responsibility publicly. You can go to the locker room and you can rip whoever you have to rip. You can fire whoever you have to fire. You do whatever you have to do to correct it behind closed doors. But publicly, out front, you take the loss. When you win, you give all the credit to the team. That is the very first thing I was taught in management. When you have somebody who does something well, you parade them out in front of the entire team and you publicly embrace them and celebrate them. When somebody does something wrong, you say nothing about it openly and you behind closed doors, you correct and you do those things. Willie Taggart can't seem to figure this out and it drives me insane. He's not the only coach, by the way, that throws other people under the bus.
Oh, yeah.
But to come out and say, I don't take responsibility. I didn't call the plays. I don't call our plays. That's Kendall's job. I don't know what's going on. I'm not going to answer your question on why we did this or why we did that. It's not my responsibility. How the hell is it not your responsibility? You're the head coach.
He is the overall leader of the football team. He has veto power. He can say, clock this thing. Now, I can see it from a different perspective, right? If I want to play devil's advocate and say, okay, the reason that they called this was they were trying to catch Virginia off guard because Virginia's expecting us to clock it and do this. Yeah. But you have a better chance of getting yourself organized. You have a better chance of scoring when you are organized and when your team knows what is happening. Not that you had any timeouts to be able to actually get in there and do anything to set But to get everybody set up so that they understand what their job is right in that moment.
It doesn't matter if it worked or not. And it doesn't, like, it's just one of those things where you lose the game when you're asked about
You say it was my
responsibility
fault.
And move on. Just say it was chaotic at the end. I didn't get it done. And we're going to figure this thing out. You give the standard coach speak that you're supposed to give. And then whatever you have to do at the end, you know, you correct it later. I can't believe that was his answer, which is why I don't call the plays. Don't ask me about the play call because I don't call the plays.
Now, Jim Leavitt was brought in as a defensive assistant, like a defensive analyst, right?
He was brought in like in the middle of the week, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, middle of the week. I'm not saying he had anything to do with this, but what I am saying is, how do you feel the chemistry is between that coaching staff? Obviously, it was really bad last year.
I don't think that
Taggart is happy with any of his guys, and I don't know that any of the guys that are there are happy with what Taggart is doing. Like, this is a complete dumpster fire. They only lost by 7 on the road to a really good Virginia team. They've got talent. They don't have, I think, the right guys in the right places. They definitely don't have the leadership. I mean,
when leadership refuses to take personal responsibility, nobody under them will ever take personal responsibility, which means you're going to have a coaching staff and a locker room full of people pointing the fingers at someone else.
Yeah.
And you have anarchy and nothing but destruction and chaos from there. Anything good that happens in that situation, is all an accident. A blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. But other than that, it's going to be nothing but chaos and destruction. Yeah. Because these people are not going to change. They're not going to change their stripes. If they're not man enough to take personal accountability now, when it's hard, then they're never going to do it. They're just never going to do it.
Now, that being said, as bad as this team is, they could still move into...
make a bowl game?
They could still make a bowl game. They could still end up like 7-5. That's the next topic. Topic number three, the ACC's weird, awful weekend. So, along with the Florida State-Virginia ending and everything else, Wake Forest 24, North Carolina 18, it was a non-conference game. Sam Howell...
seems on this weekend, this is what matters.
Sam Howell, for whatever reason, well, really just anybody for North Carolina doesn't want to do anything until the second half, I guess. It makes no sense to me. Like, when I left to go down to the sports books on Friday night, it was 21-0 Wake Forest at the half, and I sent you the screenshot, right? You and the Westlock Pirates guys, I sent y'all the screenshot of the first half stats, and North Carolina had done nothing. Absolutely not. Well, in the second half, Wake Forest did nothing. Like, they got a field goal in the second half. It was ridiculous, but the ACC came out Saturday morning and just kind of swept this under the rug, and they said, yeah, there should have been 1 second left on the clock. If you didn't see the end of that game, it was absolutely insane. But there was 1 second left on the clock when North Carolina's player ran out of bounds, and they would have had a shot at a Hail Mary to... And a reasonable shot. I mean, they were down at the 35-40-yard line. Like, so they had a shot there, but the ACC screwed that one up, their officiating committee, in a non-conference game that absolutely means nothing to the ACC standings, which is still the weirdest thing maybe having been scheduled ever. I don't understand it. Kansas, 48, Boston College, 24. We're going to get more into that here in a little bit. But, yeah, Boston College, not good. Pitt loses to Penn State, 17-10. Let's discuss this for 2 seconds, okay, before we get into some of the other scores. Pitt was down by 7 with about 4 minutes left in this game, and they get the ball to Penn State's 1 yard line. Now, did you watch this?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, because I've got Pitt, and I've got the entire world on YouTube telling me how big of a moron I am.
Yeah, I know, right?
Penn State's going to beat them by 40, which those guys are all wrong. And
yeah,
your boy was right.
So yep, okay. Your boy was right. Yep, you're right.
I'm all in this game.
So Pitt gets down there on the 1 yard line, 4th and goal from the 1.
I don't understand this.
With 4 minutes left,
with a chance to tie the game.
With a chance to tie the game because they're only down 17-10. And Pat Narduzzi chooses to kick a 19-yard field goal. So here are the different options here. You can go for it, and you score the touchdown, and you can tie the game, in which case you give Penn State time to go down the field and score, or whatever. But either way, the game would be tied rather than you being down. If you don't get the touchdown, Penn State gets the ball on their own 1 yard line with
you play great defense all game
with a super inexperienced offense that has not really done a ton in this game, right?
No.
That's the other option is you kick a field goal from a bad angle that your kicker has a greater than zero chance of missing anyway, which still puts you in the same position, but Penn State gets the ball on the 20. This should never be a question. You have to go for that 100 times out of 100. And his reasoning, and now check this out. Did you see that he doubled down on this after the game?
No, I didn't. When that game was over, I was just glad to get the ticket cash to move.
Narduzzi, to the media afterwards, said, well, we were going to have to score twice to win the game anyway, so I wanted to go ahead and take the points. But couldn't you score in overtime?
I was like just about to say, if you – God almighty, these coaches. I cannot – when I was a child, I used to think everybody coaching at this level, was just a football genius. No. And they all knew every aspect of all this game, and the difference between the best and the worst was almost nothing, and it all was all about the talent. There's a reason that all I do in college is follow coaches, because I just believe that that is where the consistency is. In a sport in which the kids turn over every couple of years, you just follow the smartest, brightest, and the hardest working guys.
Yeah.
And consistently, you'll do better than if you don't. Okay.
I'm with you.
There's one of the reasons why I had Pitt being one of the worst teams in college football this year before the season started. Okay. It's because these guys are morons. They're just idiots.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like that type of logic has to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Well, you got a chance to tie the game in a massive rivalry game, or kick a field goal and still be down by four in a game in which you've only scored twice already anyway.
Exactly.
What, and then was that it, field goal, was does it help you win anyway? So it's not two scores. You got to score twice to win. It's you have to score a touchdown at some point in time to win.
Yes. And your best chance will be from the 1 yard line.
From the 1 yard line.
It was a Clay Travis that said that the majority of college football coaches are really, if they didn't have college football coaching jobs, they would just be PE teachers at a high school.
Yes,
like that'd be about the best thing they could do.
And I completely agree. And that's kind of an insult to a lot of PE teachers out there. I mean, folks
right.
that think these guys would be CEOs of major firms because they're so competitive. And they're so – just because you're – look, there's a lot of people that are out in this world that are really competitive that are also really dumb.
Yeah.
Okay? They're just not smart. You know what they're good at? They're good at going to the Y and playing pickup basketball because 100%. They've got their competitive team. They just don't have any skills.
100%. Continuing on with the ACC, with their weird, awful weekend, West Virginia, 44, NC State, 27. NC State – had looked okay, but West Virginia, Neil Brown finally got that thing figured out, and this was a team that could not score in the first 2 weeks against James Madison, and then they went and got beat by 31 at Missouri last week, and NC State goes into Morgantown and gets almost a 50-burger dropped on them. They lose by 17. Virginia Tech, 24, Furman, 17. This was a 17-3 ball game at one point. No, 14-3, wasn't it? Either way, they were down big, and it was turnovers. It was all sorts of different stuff that happened there. Citadel, 27, Georgia Tech, 24. It kind of makes you question, okay, how bad is South Florida if they just went in last week and got beat up by Georgia Tech? And then the Citadel comes in.
I hate that circularity.
I know. The
because with
I know.
That's just bad logic.
Yes, I understand. But it's still there, right? It's like Citadel went in and beat them in overtime. Georgia Tech, those players know what the triple option is. How in the world could you not stop it? That's just it's crazy to me. And then finally, of course, the last one, the Clemson 41, Syracuse 6. Syracuse was the next guy up behind Clemson. Everybody thought they might have an opportunity. Clemson absolutely boat raced them. And I'm telling you, that last touchdown just killed me. I didn't have a ton on it, but when that line got up to Syracuse plus 28, I went ahead and took it.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, it just ridiculous. So, but I will say this, even with Clemson winning like they are, it's the same thing with Alabama, with LSU, with whoever. Like, I heard a really good analogy, by the way. So Clemson goes 15-0 last year, right? And Florida State, back in 2013, they win the BCS title. They are everybody's darlings. They don't lose anybody off the team. They come back, and the next year, they just dream state walk through the rest of the season. They come back in games that they have to come back in, but they don't really play anybody. It's not a difficult schedule, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then they go undefeated, get into the playoff with a third seed, but don't look good all year, and then they get absolutely steamrolled by Oregon.
Yep.
Clemson kind of looks like the same thing. I mean, Trevor Lawrence had good numbers, but two more interceptions for him? I mean, that puts him at 5 on the year. That's more than he had all of last year.
And look at the defenses he's doing it against.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not great schemed defenses or great talented cornerbacks out there, okay?
No,
this is just not that.
This is complacency.
I absolutely think that has potential to happen. Now, the best thing that can happen to Clemson is nobody jumped them, okay? Which, A, people are going to say I'm just taking shots at Clemson, but I'm not. If they go undefeated, which they're going to go undefeated through the rest of the schedule,
oh, yeah.
There is a world in which they could have 0 wins against the top 25 team if A&M loses 4 games this year with their really tough schedule.
Well, and we'll see what happens with A&M against Auburn next week.
When the season is over, if A&M's not ranked, they won't have a win against a single ranked opponent.
Yeah.
And can you have them 1 or 2 if that's the case? I don't care what they did last year. I don't care that they're the champs until you beat them. If they don't play a ranked team all year, then I just don't know that you can justifiably have them 1 or 2. And I almost don't care what the other records are of the other teams. You can have a 2-loss SEC team or a 2-loss Big Ten team get in. And that's fine. That's fine. Those teams are battle tested, and they deserve to be ranked higher than you. They just do.
This will be an interesting case study to see what happens with a team like UCF, right?
That's right. You can't look at UCF's schedule and say they ain't played nobody, and so therefore they don't belong. And then look at what Clemson's doing and say they ain't played nobody. They don't belong.
Yeah. Because they're
UCF's
the same
schedule the year that they claim the national championship, that schedule is going to be harder than what they're going to have this year.
Yeah,
I assure you of that. If you look at their strength of schedule when the season's over with, UCF's schedule will be harder than what Clemson's schedule is going to be at the final year. They need to hope and beg that A&M finishes in the top 10, that A&M rips off a win against Alabama,
yeah.
They rip off a win against LSU or Georgia, or they need to win 2 of those games and be in the top 10 when it's over.
Yeah, you got that right. And they need Syracuse to do something. Stop looking like what they're looking like right now.
That's right.
To go on and close out this ACC, and we'll have to run through the rest of these fairly quickly, this is the 2019 record against Power 5 teams, okay? I'm going to roll through it. Big 12 is 6-3 against other Power 5s. The SEC, 5-4 against other Power 5s. Big 10, 4-4. Pac-12, 3-3. The Mountain West is 7-9 against the Power 5. The American is 4-10. The ACC is 2-7 against other Power 5 teams or Power 5 conferences. Pretty, pretty terrible. Let's move into number 4 here. Arizona State 10, Michigan State 7, and did your boy call this one, or did he call this one? Now, I thought that Michigan State would win the game because I thought at home it's one thing and they'll win it close, but there's no way Herm Edwards is losing by 2 touchdowns. It's not happening. And quarterback Jaden Daniels was fantastic. He wasn't great all game because these are 2 really good defenses. But, man, he led a 75-yard touchdown drive for a 10-7 lead with 50 seconds left on the clock. Michigan State drives 50 yards in 38 seconds. There's 12 seconds left on the clock. The kid hits a 42-yard field goal. And tell me this. When did the rule change about illegal participation? I thought that it was a 15-yard penalty for if you play with 12 guys on the field, but it was, if it's an illegal substitution, like you don't get a guy off the field in time or whatever, then it's only a 5-yarder. But if you go back and look, Michigan State played the play with 12 guys on the field.
I don't know that that matters. That just all depends on where the refs call the foul.
Well, that's
right. Like, why should you be penalized more if the refs don't catch it until the play is over than if they catch it before the play starts?
Well,
that's
no,
because that needs to be changed. I'm not a fan of that. It can't be one way if the refs catch it, and another way if they don't catch it.
No. It's if you play with 12, in the past it has always been that's a 15-yard penalty. And if, but if you,
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
Gary,
but if they, if you got a guy running off the field,
I'm not a, like, I, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, I think the rule now is it's just a 5-yard penalty either way.
I think that's right. I think so that's how it needs.
That's the way it goes now. But that's what I was trying to figure out is, and I'm not saying that it didn't need to be changed. I'm just saying it used to be a 15-yarder, which would have made this a 57-yard field goal for him to retry, as opposed to a 47-yard field goal, which would have been ridiculously impossible, right? So, but either way, he comes out. They've got, they hit the field goal. They've got 12 on the field. They have to come back out and kick it from 47, and he completely shanks it. Just way, way over to his left. And Arizona State goes out with a win in a game where Michigan State had 404 total yards to Arizona State's 216.
This is the weirdest. If you look at box scores.
Oh, yeah.
Like if there was back in the day when friends and family of mine that I knew were in the wagering business before it might have been legal. they literally get the USA Today and they just did everything through box scores. And that's how they kind of did their analysis on what teams were. And I mean, I was kind of taught at a young age, you don't always look at the scores when you're preparing for next week.
Yeah.
You look at how teams performed, because sometimes there's nobody that would have looked at that box score and been like, wait, what? This team lost? This team won?
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Like,
at Michigan State,
no possible way that happens.
Michigan State had one turnover. Arizona State had none. Michigan State missed two field goals. Arizona State was not able to do anything most of the day, but this Jaden Daniels kid has got ice water in his veins, whatever cliche thing you want to say. He is the real deal. He's a true freshman. He was the number two quarterback in last year's class at 247, and he went to Arizona State, and he won out the starting job. And Herm Edwards, that's a dude. Like, I think that this thing is actually going to work with him. People laughed at it.
We laughed at it. We didn't people. We'll say people.
But no, we laughed at it. But it's,
you and me laughed at it.
But everybody was laughing at it.
Nah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't listen. You take responsibility.
Yeah.
We laughed at it. We were wrong.
We were dead wrong. We were way wrong about this. But yeah. I was right at least on this game because I knew he wasn't going to lose by two touchdowns to Sparty, period. So let's move on from that one. Let's go to the Big Ten non-conference losses.
All right.
How you feel about that?
We rolled through them.
Eastern Michigan 34, Illinois 31, and this was not a fluke. Eastern Michigan outgained them by, you know, 80-some-odd yards and was able to throw the ball all day on them. Illinois still not back in the bowl game business. After that, Temple 20, Maryland 17. And do we want to talk about that? I'm going to talk about the AAC.
Okay.
Well, you know what? We're going to talk about it right now. Maryland, 5 out of 21 on third downs. Temple had 3 turnovers. Maryland only had 1. And Temple demolished these guys. Like, was able to slow down this offense. It was fun to watch. No, I mean, it was rainy. It was a couple other things, but
physically imposed their will against Maryland defensively.
The same thing happened last year. And this, you remember, we were in our little group chat. We talked about this. And I brought up, like, let's not crown Maryland just yet. I know they got dudes, but they looked really good through 2 games.
You were talking about not crowning them because last year around week 5 or week 6, they fell off. Now, week 3, they fell off against Temple.
No, okay? I said
it in
there. They
fell off when they got into Big Ten play.
It was the same thing last year, though. They looked really good. They beat Texas, and then they looked really good against an also-ran. And then week 3 last year, when Temple came in and absolutely gave them the business, because Temple had come off losses to Villanova and Illinois State or something. I mean,
it was something bad. It was something really bad. I remember.
Really bad. And they were 0-2 and looked like garbage and came in and housed them 35-14 in College Park. And now it's the same thing. Like, they didn't house them this time, but that offense was slowed way down. They looked super confused, didn't know what was going on. This was a very interesting thing to watch. Because when the pressure got on, and that fourth down stop, with what, no time left on the clock, basically. That was something else. To decide to run the ball there was, I mean, you're running right into the strength of Temple's defense. It was just ridiculous. So, yeah, so Temple gets a win over Maryland. That's not a good thing for the Big Ten. Along with that, TCU 34, Purdue 13. And, of course, we already talked about Arizona State.
That's nothing to wag a finger at, though.
Yeah, wait, say what?
That's nothing to wag a finger at, though.
And no.
Listen, Gary Patterson's got some dudes, and they're coming off a bad season. I had a feeling they were going to be playing some hard football this year.
Oh, yeah. Now, we'll say this. Purdue without Elijah Sindelar.
Yes.
There were a lot of people that thought that this would make Purdue a little bit better. I don't think it did. But I don't think anything would have made them better in this game.
No.
I mean, TCU was just heads and shoulders better than Purdue was in all aspects of the game.
From Gary Patterson.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I expect from Gary Patterson.
Now, you got that right. So, and like I said, of course, Arizona State beats Michigan State. That's not good for Sparty to be losing at home to a Pac-12 team that isn't expected to do very well, but, I mean, who knows? They could end up being really, really good. Let's move into number six here. After the Big Ten goes through their mess, let's talk about Les Miles being back. He is back, baby. You got the win. You called this one. And I liked your pick because, I mean, it was 82% of the money and the bets were on Boston College to cover. That line was ridiculous. But yep. 48-24, here, let me give you the stats.
Come on.
Kansas, 567 yards of offense. Boston College, 447. Kansas had one turnover. Boston College had zero. Kansas with 329 rushing yards. You had 11 rushes for 187 from Khalil Herbert. He also had a touchdown. And then Puka Williams had a touchdown and 22 carries for 121 yards. This was a butt-whipping. This wasn't a fluke. This wasn't the ball bounced crazy a couple of times or they got one matchup that they couldn't. This was all aspects of the game. Kansas destroyed Boston College. And that ain't a good look for the ACC like we talked about earlier. Your boy's back.
Hey, man, I don't know how back he is. I know this. I've seen this man coach too long. I know when you're talking about a bounce-back situation, coming off a bad loss, you let him take his team on the road. They get away from home. They get away from all the distractions. They get away from all the naysayers of a losing program just with their heads down, feeling like they're beat. Let's go on the road. Let's go into a hostile environment, and that's where we're going to come together. I've watched him do it for too damn long. He's too good of a coach. He's too good of a motivator. He's going to find a way. I love this man so much. I like the way just people buy in to what he's selling. He makes you believe in yourself more than anyone I've ever seen. And I'm just – I don't know what Kansas is going to be at the end of this year. But I knew this week they weren't going to get their ass whooped, okay?
I just
couldn't see it.
This was the first road win over a Power 5 team since 2007. It had been 12 years since Kansas went on the road and beat anybody of substance. And we'll talk about this at the end of the night, but it's the first time since 2006 that both Kansas State and Kansas had road wins against Power 5 teams on the same day. So, moving on from Les Miles and your Rock Chalk Jayhawks now. Number seven, Florida 29, Kentucky 21. Would you like to comment before I say anything about this game?
No, so as soon as Felipe Franks goes down, I'm watching every second of this game, and you and the guys on our group text are kind of in and out and doing other things. And as soon as Felipe Franks goes down, I immediately respond with, we have a situation in Kentucky, and you never want to see somebody get hurt. But while Felipe Franks was quarterbacking this team, and I don't mean to say something negative or bad about a guy that got hurt, it's part of the game sometimes, but I never once worried about my bet, and I thought Kentucky had a strong opportunity to win this game. And as soon as Felipe goes down, I immediately got worried. Because I always felt for a long time whoever's behind him just didn't get a chance. Just didn't get a chance. And as soon as they get a chance, this Florida team's got talent. And I think he was the governor on that engine that was pulling it back and holding it down. Not that he can't make plays, but he's just going to give the ball to the other team too many times.
Or and, just make really bad decisions with the football.
Well, that's
and,
it. That's
and,
it.
And make I mean, more bad. And if you've got a guy like Kyle Trask, here's the situation. UK was up 21-10 in the third quarter.
And dominating the game.
Dominating the football game. Yeah, when Felipe Franks went down with that injury, which was ugly. I mean, I couldn't even go back and watch it.
They refused to replay it, which I like.
Yeah, that was good. So enter Kyle Trask, who went 9 out of 13 for 126 yards. He had no touchdowns passing, but he had one quarterback sneak that went 1 yard for a touchdown.
He moved the offense just so much more efficient.
Yes, because he didn't make bad decisions. He knew exactly where to go with the football. He just followed the game plan. There was no coming up with, you know, creativity plays, right? Like it wasn't anything like that. It was just follow the script. And you've got more talent than these guys, so follow the script and you will be able to win. So Florida goes up 22-21 with 4:11 left. UK drives to the Florida 22, calls three straight runs, and then Chance Poor misses a 35-yard field goal that would have won the game. That's bad coaching. So, of course, to get into your bad beat for the weekend, you had Kentucky plus 7.5. They're down by one. If they make the field goal, they're up by two with, 30 seconds left, whatever it is. Yep. I think it was like 50 seconds. Either way.
Whatever. But I can't lose.
You can't lose at that point.
It's not impossible to lose a game.
And instead, they missed the field goal after they moved the ball down the field by throwing the football. And Correct. They had timeouts.
Yes, sir.
Why would you not continue to be aggressive once you get down inside the 25-yard line? That makes no sense to me why coaches do that, especially with a redshirt freshman kicker.
Yeah, and no besmirching to the kicker, but that's a terrible kicker name. Like you know how I feel about karma and signs and just like the world telling me things. There's no way on earth I would allow a kicker, somebody who has to be accurate, kicker, quarterback, something of that nature. That I would never recruit that guy or allow them to be on my team with the name of Chance Poole.
Yeah.
Well, Chance, no, we're not doing this. All right, no, you're either legally changing your name or you're kicking somewhere else.
Or we're just gonna call you something else.
Not on my team, and we're putting a different name on your jersey.
Yeah,
like this is not happening.
Yeah,
I believe that you get confidence in who you are by knowing who you are. You grew up with the last name of Poor. No, you don't get to be accurate. No.
And so, but as far as not being aggressive, I understand Kentucky had a backup quarterback.
He was playing fine. Was he deadly accurate? No. Was he everything you want?
But Sawyer Smith had really been able. Good. He had been able to move the offense at Troy last year. Like he's good.
He's gonna be fine. He's gonna be fine.
Just irritating as can be.
Lots of redshirt freshmen in college football had an opportunity Saturday, and lots of them played really well.
Yeah.
I mean, this is definitely a young man's game now.
So your bad beat, right? Let's talk about your bad beat for 2 seconds. Josh Hammond. Florida runs into the line two straight times.
Kentucky calls the timeout. Just trying to kill the clock.
Trying to kill the clock. And even Dan Mullen, after this happened, they run an end around because if you get a first down, the game is over.
That's right. You kneel it.
But the play was you run the end around, you get the first down, you go down.
That's right.
And instead, Josh Hammond takes the end around 76 yards for a touchdown with 33 seconds left, which leaves time on the clock, and Florida only up by 8, which is an idiotic play by the Florida player because it left time on the clock and it kept it a one-score game. And two, why? Why? Like, just...
Because he saw the end zone. He saw the end zone. He wanted it.
I understand that you want to score.
But I get it. I'm not mad at the kid for scoring. I mean, I'm furious. Okay, I was so pissed off.
You were so close to a 4-0 week.
Yeah. Needed a 4-0 week. Really, really angry, really upset. But, at the end of the day, I do understand. These guys are college kids. In the pro game, that's a little different because you're paid to know about all these scenarios. Currently, these guys are not compensated. And so, therefore, I just get it. I'm going to give him a pass. You know, I'd like my $50 back. But, you know, if some booster slips him a Lincoln, you know, send him my way. I'll open the Venmo up and we'll call this fair. I understand the desire to do that.
Like, yeah,
that makes sense to me.
All right. You ready to move on number eight?
Oh, yeah.
Number eight.
You can fly through these however you want to do it.
BYU 30, USC 27 in overtime. BYU's defense confused Slovis enough to get three interceptions out of him, one of them in overtime. USC, 452 yards against that defense. BYU had 430 yards against USC. This was actually a fun game to watch. I had this on the iPad for a little while.
Yep.
Slovis throwing that pick in overtime after BYU hit that field goal, it wasn't a terrible read or anything like that. He just never saw the guy. He was confused, and that's what you're going to get out of freshman quarterbacks sometimes. BYU looks pretty good right now. I mean, this has a chance of being a 8-4, 9-3 kind of football team. That kid Zach Wilson, the quarterback, real deal, man. He is a tough SOB. Like, I enjoy watching him. I think that's a pretty good football team. And this is about exactly what I expected USC to be, right? They're going to play really well at home sometimes. They're not going to play so well on the road. They're not going to look great against good teams. But, and that, I think that means that Stanford's probably not a very good football team. But, man, USC is probably a 6-6, 7-5 kind of football team just based on the schedule that they play.
So I've got no analysis on this game whatsoever, other than yesterday morning, you and I had a lengthy text conversation where I send you the first thing I do, I get on, and I've already got some plays from the week from when we make gambling picks and things that I've liked and don't like. And I'm looking online and thinking, where am I going to make my bets today? What games are coming up that I didn't play? And I saw on Vegas Insider that 83% of the bets were coming in on the under in this game. And the line moved 8 points up.
Yeah.
Not down.
From 40.
They went over 40. I'd have to find the text message because I sent it all to you.
I think it was like 47 and it moved up to like 55 or something.
It moved to 56 and a half. It was a half point, whatever it was. It was 8 points difference and it stopped at 56 and a half. And I told you, I said, there is some chicanery, to use the F word in that, to this. This doesn't make sense. Vegas does not make this mistake, and it's across the board. Every sports book you look for, it's not one place got hammered, and so they have to move it to get action the other way or anything like that. Every book you find moved it 8 points up, and 83% of the money and the bets were coming in on the under. There is something not right here. All I thought about that day was I want to take the under in this game. I think both of these defenses are going to play well. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game.
But when you see that line moving up.
And I saw that and I was like,
nope.
I'm just going to go with the house. I'm going to blindly go against what I think, and I'm just going to bet with Vegas. I did this in the South Carolina game week one. It cost me against North Carolina. But this is 8 points the other way. This is not 1.5 points. This is a massive line movement against major, major action going against the house. Vegas knew something. This is where the conspiracy theory comes out in me and says, what the hell? But it also means when I see that, just hammer it.
Yeah,
just blindly hammer
just
it.
Just blindly hammer it, and you'll come out as a winner.
Don't trust those. They don't build those big buildings in Vegas for nothing. They'll build them off of winners, okay?
I like going with the house. That's always the smartest play. Don't trust the public. The public will win sometimes.
I have no idea how we were going to get to that number, but they were hitting 57. I'd have bet my kids on it. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah. You're right.
I was trying to figure out what happened.
Let's move into number eight real quick. The American Athletic Conference making their Power 6 case again. Yes, they're only 4-10 against the Power 5 right now, but that is the lower end of the conference, not the upper end. UCF absolutely put a beat down on Stanford, 45-27, and it really wasn't that close. I mean, this was a 38-7 ball game.
Stanford got garbage time points.
Yeah. Temple, of course, we talked about that, 20-17 over number 21, Maryland. And let me ask you this. So Memphis, of course, puts a beat down on South Alabama, who was able to hang with Nebraska. But is SMU actually pretty good? I mean, this team is 3-0 now. They have wiped out some pretty decent, you know, group of five competition.
You know, they've been great in the past.
It's Sonny Dykes, I think, has got this thing rolling right now.
Yeah, no, they could absolutely be a contender here.
And so, and then, of course, Washington State and Houston. You want to talk about some upset dudes. I was at Sam's Town on Friday night.
This game is nothing going to the halftime?
This game, I left, you know, early second quarter, but the over-under is 74.5 in this game. And when you see guys that have hundreds of dollars, if not more, riding on an over between these two coaches, and it is nothing to nothing, you will hear words you have never heard spoken in your life.
All those people are suckers, man.
Oh, they're, yeah, suckers.
This was one of those situations, again, we talked about this, me and you did, that it's just everybody was on the over. I guarantee you it's not happening.
Yeah. Well, the other side of it, so everybody thinks, oh, they're friends, they're both offensive gurus, they're going to want to show out for each other. Or it could mean that they both know the other person's playbook.
Mike Leach taught him everything he knows, yes, about how to run this offense.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
He knows how to stop it. I promise you. He knows the kill switch. He knows where it's at.
Yes, he most certainly does. Number 10.
I found it really fun to watch, though, right? Like, I still really like this game, even because you and I are not afraid of defense. I like this game a lot.
Yeah. No, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I stayed up watching the whole thing.
I love both of these coaches. You know that, though.
Oh, of course I do. Dana Holgerson's got the best hair in the business, and Mike Leach is the best storyteller in the business. So,
love these guys.
If rather than watch the game, I'd rather just watch those two talking. I think that would have been better.
Put me on a boat with unlimited amounts of booze and those two guys, I'm the happiest dude alive.
You believe that. Next up, number 10, superstars putting up big numbers again. And now I know that this, again, kind of a slow week. There's probably some other games that we could talk about. But let's talk about the superstars of the sport that everybody talks about for the Heisman and everything else. Tua, 28 out of 36, 444 yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 picks. That is a school record for passing yardage in a game. 5 touchdowns, that ties the school record at Alabama. 0 interceptions. He has just been absolutely lights out phenomenal this year, and it is what it is, right? Jalen Hurts on the other side, 15 out of 20 for Oklahoma in a big 48-14 win in the Rose Bowl. 289 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had 14 runs for 150 yards and another touchdown. Clemson, let's talk about Trevor Lawrence. He put up some stats. 22 out of 39, had 395 yards. He had 3 touchdowns. He had 2 more interceptions, though. 4 runs for 42 yards and 1 touchdown. Did you watch him talking a little trash to Syracuse when he was going in for that run? Yeah. Just no reason for it. Like, you're so much better than these guys. Why? Why continue to do that? He does it every game.
I know, and he plays such a cupcake schedule. I swear to God,
it feels like he's a bully.
anybody who wants to cry about UCF's schedule, please shut your mouth if you're going to blow up Clemson. Shut your mouth.
Yeah, you're right. Justin Fields was 14 out of 24 for 199 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had 4 runs for 11 yards and 1 touchdown, and then this is the thing that won the ball game for Ohio State. I mean, they absolutely dismantled Indiana, 51-10. Ohio State put up over 300 yards rushing. J.K. Dobbins was unstoppable in this game. Just ridiculous. All right, let's wrap up with this last game here. Kansas State.
Oh, you want to talk about all those dudes? You're not going to talk about my boy?
You want to talk about what, Joe Burrow? Man, he played.
He played
Northwestern State. We talked about Burrow last week.
Who did Trevor Lawrence play?
Syracuse.
a team that just got boathoused by
these are all guys that we haven't talked about much this year because they haven't played anybody.
Because I don't play nobody. That,
what were the stats on
No, we're fine. Move on.
No, actually, let's do talk about this. No, we're done. Let's talk about Burrow for 2 seconds here.
We should move on because I assure you that team that they played would give UCLA all they want. All they want. That team that LSU beat the hell out of would give Syracuse all they want right now.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know.
No, we won't see because those teams won't schedule them.
No,
but they're terrible.
So tell me this, and I haven't looked it up. I do want to see, though. Is Joe Burrow really at 83% completion percentage on the season?
You goddamn right he is.
I mean, that 83% on the season?
Hang on. I'm getting there. I'm going to give you his numbers today. That actually is not who I thought you were going to include him. And so I was a little annoyed you didn't. The guy I thought you should include, the dude that's back, the star that was the star that's been reborn, is Khalil Tate, our guy.
You know what?
You didn't give those numbers out. Now, his passing wasn't great, but he's back to like 150, 160 yards rushing, TDs, just running it down people's throats. No one could catch him. That's who I thought you were going to. The whole reason I thought you did that segment was to get back to say, and Khalil Tate, because he's a superstar in this league.
So, look, Khalil Tate, 14 out of 23.
Reason to talk about Alabama because they ain't played nobody. And so every week we got to find a way to throw them in when they don't play nobody. So.
They played on the road at South Carolina. It's the same thing as Jalen going to play UCLA and Trevor Lawrence going to play Clemson. It's the same thing.
They used to play. They played somebody's.
Yeah, but when I talk about the superstars of the sport, this is the college game day. Like, these are the dudes that everybody brings up for the Heisman Trophy. Khalil Tate ain't got no chance to win the Heisman Trophy. Went 14 out of 23, 185 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. He had 17 carries, 129 yards, and one touchdown. I will say this.
129 yards. You're just going to poo-poo that? Rushing? Come on, man.
When is the last time that Kevin Sumlin actually out-coached somebody in the fourth quarter?
Last night.
Before last night.
Oh, when he was at Texas A&M sometime.
Probably Alabama. When Johnny Manziel was there?
Yep.
I mean, what he did last night was pretty freaking remarkable.
Joe Burrow, 21 from 24 attempts, 373 yards, two TDs.
One pick. Joe Burrow, seven rushes, 30 yards, seven and rushes, one touchdown.
30 yards and a touchdown.
But hold on, here's his season stats, right? So Miles Brennan, who backs him up, was 8 out of 9 for 115 yards as well. But Joe Burrow, let's see, 2019 he is 54 out of 66 for 82% completion percentage, 749 yards, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick. It's pretty remarkable.
It's 75 for 90, and it's 83.3.
Where are you seeing that? Oh, this doesn't include last night. Okay, never mind. Sorry. ESPN didn't. It hadn't updated.
I accept your apology.
Hadn't updated. But, yeah, Joe Burrow is looking like the real deal. Looking like the real deal.
He's trying to find ways to fit in Alabama. I get it.
Oh,
I even put the red up for you because of it. Yeah, I even went with the red just for you. And
I do appreciate that.
Well,
it was nice to see yesterday. It was nice to see Alabama get a win. Feels like it's been so long. Let's close out with this one. Kansas State 31, Mississippi State 24. And I tossed this on at the end. One, to get us up to 11, because we always want to do our starting 11 every week. But this was an interesting game. And I wanted to bring it up because I think you and I were really wrong about Kansas State.
Oh, yeah. No question about that.
I mean, this was interesting. Like, neither team could throw the football. And I think that's actually going to work in Kansas State's favor going into Big 12 play. Kansas State, 123 yards passing. Mississippi State, 151 yards passing with two interceptions. Tommy Stevens got knocked out of the game. Both teams had three turnovers. Mississippi State backup quarterback Garrett Schrader, terrible decision, man. And I understand he's young. I get that. Terrible decision-making down the stretch.
Hey, lots of freshmen played Saturday. Lots of them did. They didn't look this bad, okay?
No. We were so wrong on Kansas State.
And you know who I was right on? You know who I was right on, by the way?
You were right on Mississippi State.
I was right about Joe Moorhead being a bad hire. I was right about waiting and rushing the hire process because 2 weeks from when they needed to hire a guy, when they hired a guy, was this arbitrary made up rule about early signing. And we got to have a head coach for early signing day because we won't get these recruits if we don't have a head coach for early signing day. When none of the big guys are signing on early signing day anyway. And so they rushed it. The good news is they almost ended up with Jeremy Pruitt because they could be Tennessee right now. They rushed it. They interviewed three people. And after every interview, they offered the job to all three people. And they didn't follow their process. They started with a process. They had a list of about seven names. And they didn't even finish the interviews. They just interviewed one. And it wasn't that their first choice was who they interviewed in order. They interviewed these people as they became available. And the last two guys that were on the list, of course, like three or four of them didn't get interviewed, but these two specifically said, I'm not interviewing until after the bowl game. I just want to coach my team in a bowl game. And they didn't get interviewed. And you know what? You rushed it. You hired a guy that I don't think is qualified and I don't think is going to do well. And I've been very open and honest about that. And I feel vindicated so far to this point. Joe Moorhead will be a bust at Mississippi State. And in 2 years, they'll be looking for a new coach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 2 years? You give them that long?
Yeah, no, I've watched Mississippi State fans last pretty long.
Pretty long with some pretty bad coaches, yeah.
Bad coaches.
You're right.
That is a school that does not like firing people and paying them. No, they will wait until your contract is over to pay you.
That is a very, very good point. Very good point. All right, that is going to wrap up the show. As always, you run over to winningcureseverything.com. Follow us on social media. You can follow me on Twitter, at GaryWCE. You can follow Chris, at ChrisBGiannini. You can follow the show at Winning Cures. Make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcast, any of your favorite podcast apps. Subscribe on YouTube. Leave some comments. Guys, this has been fun. We will talk NFL tomorrow. Chris, let's go watch some NFL games.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.